From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in doctors' offices around the world where patients and physicians are having conversations about treatment options for chronic diseases. In the United States especially, those treatment options can involve the use of prescription drugs, often surgery, or other so-called high-tech solutions. But what if changing your diet or sleep patterns or developing an exercise regime could keep you out of the operating room? That's the basis for a new medical specialty called lifestyle medicine. And Rochester is kind of a budding hotbed for the practice. Experts in lifestyle medicine say certain therapeutic approaches like eating whole foods, plant-based diets, regular physical activity, and managing stress, among other things, can prevent, treat, manage, sometimes even reverse certain conditions. Conditions that, according to the Lifestyle Medicine Global Alliance, account for 71% of deaths worldwide. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine says about 80% of healthcare costs are related to chronic diseases, and 80% of chronic disease is related to lifestyle choices. So what does that mean for you and your family the next time you visit the doctor? Will you walk out of the office with a prescription for vegetables? Or a drug, or both? Well, this hour we're joined by leaders in the lifestyle medicine movement to discuss how they hope it's changing the standards of medical care, and they'll share how you can participate in an opportunity to, if you want, try to jumpstart your own lifestyle medicine movement. Welcoming our guest this hour, Dr. Ted Barnett. The relentless Dr. Barnett is back, the founder and medical director for Rochester Lifestyle Medicine, founder and board chair of the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, and co-coordinator of the Rochester Area Vegan Society. Dr. Barnett, welcome back. Nice to see you as always.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also welcome to Dr. Michael Clapper, who is a physician, consultant, and educator, and served as the director of the Nonprofit Institute of Nutrition Education and Research. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Dr. Rebecca Monk is a nephrologist at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Doctor, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Bob Frankie is communication director for the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute. Here to not only talk about the Institute, but his own story. Welcome, Bob. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thank you.
Dr. Barnett, you and I get in touch, well, you get in touch with me every so often to let me know about things that are going on. And there has been a lot that's been going on. I'm now in year six of hosting this program. And even in my own tenure hosting Connections, it is remarkable how mainstream some of this work has become, how the approach has gone from, you know, something that seems like, well, try it, you know, who knows, to there's medical science behind it. And what would you say right now is the biggest headline? What's the biggest news here in Rochester in regards to lifestyle medicine?
So two big things. One is there are now 7 board-certified lifestyle medicine physicians in Rochester. So they gave the boards for the very first time in 2017, gave them again last fall, 2018. And so there's 7 of us now. So I think it's the highest concentration in the known universe, actually, so of lifestyle medicine physicians. And even more recently, we've received a grant from Accountable Health Partners, which is the ACO, or the Accountable Care Organization, that's affiliated with the University of Rochester. And the grant is to put 40 of their doctors through our plant-based nutrition course, which we've been teaching now for about 7 years. And we've given it over 16 times to over 740 people. The course is accredited for 12 professional credits for physicians, 12 CMEs, and the grant is to put 40 of their doctors through that course, and then the grant also is going to support each of those doctors referring 5 of their patients to our 15-day whole food plant-based jumpstart, which we've been doing for about a year, almost a year now.
Did Rochester get this way, and I don't mean this flippantly, out of luck? I mean, you've got some really important people in various movements and in various research backgrounds, medical fields, who have been talking about plant-based living for a long time now, and they happen to be here. Is it partially luck, or is it sort of the work of the industry to make Rochester a hotbed of it?
Well, you know, I mean, we've been working at it since 1991, so if that's luck, I guess, right?
Did I offend you?
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, my wife and I took over running the Rochester Vegan Society in 1995, but we became whole food, you know, we became plant-based in 1991. We've raised 3 children that way. They're young adults. They're, you know, the oldest is now 31, and they're all still totally plant-based and extremely healthy. You know, they don't have the issues that are facing most, you know, most Americans now, which is, you know, 2/3 of Americans are now either overweight or obese, and, you know, the rate of diabetes is unbelievable. But yeah, here in Rochester, we started kind of with the Rochester Vegan Society, and there I used it. I used the V word. We try to avoid that because that scares people a little bit, so we tend to use the term plant-based. And we also have Dr. Tom Campbell, who's also, you know, connected with the plant-based world. You know, his dad, he and his dad wrote the China study. And so it is kind of an amazing coincidence that we're all here together, and very exciting, very exciting. And it's, you know, it's an intellectual, I would say, region, and people are kind of open to thinking in these ways. So, yeah.
Okay. So one important point before we go around the table here, you just mentioned you kind of stay away from the word vegan.
Right.
Because it kind of scares people.
Right.
It's become almost a pejorative or something to be avoided.
I don't know. You know, some people brag about it and they're real proud of it. And, you know, they'll tell you right away. And other people are scared off. I don't really care about the people who already like the term. I don't have to convince them. What I want to do is keep not scare people away who think that, you know, to be a vegan, you've got to be some kind of a crazy activist. You know, we're just talking about plant-based nutrition, which is the way to be healthy and which is what our population needs. We have a really sick population. We're spending $3.8 trillion a year on healthcare. Probably 80% of that is spent on disease that is we don't have to get. It's foodborne illness. And if we could just convince people, and they don't have to take any kind of a stand. They just need to start taking good care of themselves, and they're going to be happy about it. It's not like it's some major sacrifice. Once people actually start and stick with it, they find that they really like it. You know, we have this 2-week jump start now, this 15-day jump start, and it's people have to go all in. And at the end of the 2 weeks, we'll tell you more about that later, but at the end of 2 weeks, they have great results, and they say, hey, that wasn't so bad.
Do you agree, Dr. Clapper, that as you've seen the conversation about plant-based diet sort of progress really strongly in the American mainstream over the years, that is a comfortable conversation, but for some reason the word vegan doesn't turn off vegans, might turn off would-be vegans who are thinking about it? Do you agree with that?
Yes, unfortunately, but on the fortunate point of view, absolutely, it's been one of the most gratifying trends in medicine to see the awareness of plant-based nutrition certainly sweep through the public and starting to awaken in the minds of physicians, which is why I'm in Rochester. I'm speaking to the medical students, trying to tell them that you're not going to be seeing leprosy and smallpox when you get out into practice. It's what your patients are eating. That's why they're sitting in front of you, overweight, diabetic, hypertensive, clogged up, and inflamed. It's the Western diet full of meat and dairy and oils and sugars and all these chemicals that are inflaming us and causing problems. Before you order another $1,000 scan, ask your patient what they ate yesterday. And if it's full of buffalo wings and burgers and pepperoni pizzas, that's where to start. And send these people to a plant-based dietitian and get their diet cleaned up. And most of these diseases go away. And so
the diseases when you go away. By the way, listeners are still absorbing that message because it's only, especially in the last couple of years, it's really picked up that you're hearing the disease can be sort of arrested and stopped. I mean, that's
the concept is called disease reversal. I've been a physician 46 years. No one ever even mentioned that term to me. As soon as I heard it, I said, right, of course. The high blood pressure, that goes away. The type 2 diabetes, the insulin receptors open up. It's remarkable. You put these people on a whole food plant-based diet, and the obesity melts away, and the arteries open up, and the high blood pressure comes down, the joints stop hurting, and the skin clears up, and the asthmatic lungs stop wheezing, and the migraine headaches go away, and they turn into normal, lean, healthy people who don't need medications. It's one of the most gratifying aspects of medicine, and all physicians should know about this, and starting with the medical students.
How much are we seeing a cultural shift where medical students are being taught about this? Because what you said at the outset of the program here is that for years, it wasn't hardly even part of the conversation.
Yeah, indeed. And it's led to this grotesque situation where we're practicing medicine, like what our patients are eating has no effect on these diseases, is beyond inadequate. It puts people's lives at risk. And it's starting to happen that the public's becoming aware of this. The medical students now, in every young class that I'm talking to, there's a 30 or 40 students who've seen films like Forks Over Knives and What the Health, and the plant-based light is on. They are hungry for it. Oh, it's an excellent film.
I'm very familiar with Forks Over Knives.
Right. Yes. Seen one called What the Health, and about why the medical profession isn't using this very, very powerful tool. But it's starting to happen. It's just in its nascent form, and that's why we're here to fan the flames and tell the young students, you're not crazy. It's what your patients are eating. That's where to put the focus. And they're listening. They are hungry for this message, no pun intended.
Well, you can see why Dr. Clapper is in demand. He's here in Rochester. People can see him where, Ted?
He'll be at the Rochester Academy of Medicine tomorrow. That's Tuesday night. And the lecture's at 7:30, and that's probably going to sell out. There's still some room also at the dinner which I'm certain is going to sell out. But the dinner starts at 6. And so there's a whole food plant-based dinner at 6 o'clock. We also have a jazz pianist. Steve Melcher will be playing there on the 9-foot Steinway at the Academy of Medicine, which is an amazing sound. So,
and people can go to my website, drclapper.com, drclaper.com.
Clapper is K-L-A-P-E-R, drclapper.com.
Correct.
More information. You want to meet him and be out there tomorrow night.
Sure.
So, so, Dr. Monk, when we talk about the impact on actual disease here, let's talk a little bit about chronic kidney disease because, you know, again, our listeners are hearing this, and maybe in recent years they thought, fringe idea is actually going to stop. If I start a plant-based diet, it's going to stop my heart disease. It's going to stop kidney disease. What have you seen?
Oh, I've seen great effects. Kidney disease affects close to 10% of the population in the United States. And it's caused mainly by diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity, as everyone's been talking about here. And there are a lot of things about animal proteins that are bad for the kidneys. For people with advanced kidney disease, they can't get rid of acids in their body, and animal proteins are higher in acids. So by changing to more plant-based foods, you can reverse that completely. Phosphorus is a big killer for patients with kidney disease, and animal protein has a lot more absorbable phosphorus, so that affects their heart disease as well as their kidney disease. So by changing to a diet high in animal, in plant-based, in plant-based foods, we can really see a reduction in the incidence of kidney disease, but also, more importantly, the progression of kidney disease once people have it.
What do your patients say when you bring up diet with them?
You know, it's interesting. In the past, they used to look at me like I have three heads, and I think there is more awareness, and some of them are now asking me about it. And what's nice about the community here with Ted and also with the Campbells, Aaron and Tom Campbell at Highland, is that there are people to refer people to teach them about the diet. So I don't have a lot of time to spend teaching them, educating them about the diet, but there are resources in town to do so. So they're much more open about it than they used to be. Because of the growing awareness, and it's a town where people are you know, listening to sources like this, movies, people are much more aware. I think there's a little bit of a fear that they don't know what they can eat, but realizing that even adding fruits and vegetables, adding the fiber in these sources of foods is very helpful. There's a whole gut. There's millions of bacteria in our gut that are made healthier by eating fiber, and they keep us healthier. And you don't get that with animal protein.
And so let me ask you a question then, sort of about culture of patients. And I don't want to speak too far out of school here because I think I want to spend a little bit more time thinking about it before we have a separate program in the future on back pain and back surgery. But I have some friends who are doctors who came to the United States from Europe, and they said it's really remarkable that back surgery is much less common where they were practicing in Europe. There's a lot more in rehab, physical therapy. And here, initially, it felt like it was a surgery mill. Oh, the surgery. But they said, To be fair to the American medical system, you also have patients who will say things very commonly like, hey, just fix me. You know, give me a surgery and fix me, as opposed to, okay, this is going to be a road ahead. It's going to be a process. We're not going to go the surgery route. We're really generalizing. I take that point. But their observation is the culture is a little bit more on, okay, if there's a surgery, just fix me. As opposed to, I'm willing to really work on this change. So when you talk to your patients about, hey, what you eat matters. Mm-hmm. I can think of I have a family member who's gone through 2 cancer surgeries in 4 years and will not change what he eats. Now, mm-hmm. He's in his 80s and doesn't want to, but will not change, even though he's been told this will affect you. Will not do it. Are you seeing people maybe more open to that change?
Yes. You know, for kidney disease, the consequence of end-stage kidney disease is needing dialysis 3 days a week or having to wait for a kidney transplant, which you don't qualify for if you have a high BMI. You have to be below a certain weight to be able to get a kidney transplant. So people have to be a good weight, and people want to stay off dialysis. Nobody wants to be on a machine 3 days a week. So I think there is incentive for people to do that. But yes, there are people who would rather just have bariatric surgery, do the surgery. But there's an increasing number of people who are willing to try dietary change.
Hmm. Well, Bob Franke has a story to tell on your own here. As the communication director for the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, when you talk to people about this, you can sort of raise your hand and say, I can attest to the benefits, yeah?
Well, yes, I like to sort of think of myself as the embodiment of this medical philosophy in practice. Historically, I've been a yo-yo dieter for pretty much my whole life, starting off with being obese as a kid and just going through a cycle that I would call suffer, success, and then surrender, where you suffer, you get success, and you lose a lot of weight in a short period of time until a trigger happens. And you surrender to that trigger, and then once you do that, the consciousness and willpower just seems to evaporate, and then you stop weighing yourself and thinking about what you're doing. And of course, if you're losing weight too quickly, then it's going to go back on very quickly as well. And that pretty much happened to me for my whole life. And I've been on just about all the diets and probably made up a few myself, including, you know, all the commercial ones and even, you know, so-called sensible diets, Mediterranean style, Weight Watchers style, various caloric intakes. But every one of those diets is either some form of abstinence or some form of extreme nutrition distortion that will trick your body into thinking it's starving in order to lose weight. Until my daughter came home about 3 years ago saying that she was going to become a vegan due to the film Cowspiracy, which is all about the economics of veganism and pollution and meat and animal products and whatnot. And my wife and I had been thinking about it for some time and said, okay, it's another diet. I'll try that. And slowly but surely, as I started researching veganism, I immediately got pulled into whole food plant-based nutrition, because there are a lot of junk food vegans out there that are, you know, doing well for the planet and the animals, but they're eating Oreos and potato chips, and they're not getting healthier. So I wanted to do it the right way. And that's when I met Dr. Ted over at Rochester Area Vegan Society. And I have a technical background. I'm not a doctor, but, you know, I do like to delve into technology, and learning about biology is kind of my newest endeavor. And we got into a lot of discussions. And I started learning about nutrition and whole food plant-based. And I won't quite say it's miraculous, but for the first time, I was able to eat whatever I wanted, as long as it conformed to a very simple standard, which is, could my grandparents have eaten it 100 years ago? And it would just happen. And slowly but steadily, over the course of the last 3 years, I've lost 115 pounds. And my cholesterol's gone from the mid-200s to 139 was my last one. Blood pressure sits around 108 over 70-something. And I just feel great. And, I am enjoying this. I'm discovering food that I never knew existed before, in terms of spices from around the world, and you know, the plethora of vegetables and fruits, and ways of combining them, that is just so much fun. There's a really great community around the whole food plant-based nutrition, Ravs is a part of that. And you know, one of the great little benefits is when you travel, all you have to do is look for a vegan restaurant. And you know, as opposed to any other kind of restaurant, you go in there and there's a community in there. And so you just, there's this whole social network that is around whole food plant-based, and it's wonderful.
So part and parcel of becoming a vegan, did you become meaner or more militant?
No, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've been pursuing what I call compassionate eating, okay? And I've also been a victim of trying to do vegan advocacy by an organization that I'll leave nameless, but they're very militant, they're very aggressive, and I believe I actually suffered trauma.
Oh, interesting.
I was a monthly donor. I was part of an action network. But for some reason, they infiltrated my browser, and I was inundated with very disturbing graphic images of, you know, animal experimentation and industrial animals and things like that. And I called them up and I said, hey, you know, I'm on your side. I get it. I give you money. I send your emails and write your letters. Please stop doing this to my browser. And this went on for months, and it didn't go away. So I eventually had to treat them like a malicious invader and sever myself from them. So I do understand that a lot of vegans put animals above humans. And I don't believe that is necessary. I believe that we should just hold all life sacred and respect the animals, but respect fellow humans as well.
The question I asked was, I hope, obviously cheeky, and if listeners are vegan and hear that, please don't email me angry. I was being cheeky because Dr. Barnett was saying earlier that there's a bit of a branding issue with the word vegan, which is why you'll often hear plant-based. And I take the point. I don't think Dr. Barnett, to be fair, I don't think that's a majority of vegans. No. I don't even, but there's probably a vociferous minority who feels very strongly about something. What do you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't think we need to dwell on that too much. I mean, that's one of the reasons. So in 2015, we started Rochester Lifestyle Medicine, which obviously doesn't have the word vegan in it. And it's to basically teach plant-based nutrition and actually run a medical practice like that. So, you know, if we're really going to change things, we really need to change the healthcare system. You know, one of the problems when people get really healthy and they don't go this way, they fall off the radar of healthcare system. So that's why doctors often don't even realize these people are out there, because they don't meet them. They don't get sick. Right? Right? Or if they were sick, they get better and they disappear, and the doctor doesn't really know why. So, for example, we had a patient do our jumpstart in September who was diabetic. He was not getting any treatment. For people who know numbers, his hemoglobin A1C was 13.6. which is very high, very out of control, diabetic. His doctor said, you got to go on medication. He said, I don't want to do that. So we did our 15-day jumpstart, turned everything around. And by the middle of December, his hemoglobin A1C was 6.0, which is basically normal. So doesn't need medication, is not diabetic anymore. So when you hear this, us talking about how you can reverse these things, people think, well, gee, I have diabetes. That's like, I'm looking down this long, dark tunnel now. I'll never get out of this dark tunnel. And there's an exit right over here. You can just get out. So,
well, I want to get some of your feedback, listeners. So we're coming to your phone calls in a moment here. Dr. Barnett, if people want to do the Jumpstart program, what can they do?
They can go visit Rochester Lifestyle Medicine, which is rocklifemed.com. You can just Google Rochester Lifestyle Medicine. It comes right up. And also there's a lecture tomorrow night at the Academy.
So rocklifemed.com if you want to learn about the program. The lecture tomorrow night with Dr. Clapper is these things often do sell out. I sound like I'm sort of shilling or marketing. I'm not. They don't need me for that. I'm just being honest. So if you want to get more information, go where?
Go back to also rocklifemed.com. Yeah.
Okay. Or Dr. Clapper, which is K-L-A-P-E-R .com. DrClapper.com. Let me get Rachel in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Rachel.
Hi. I'm on Bluetooth, so I apologize in advance for communication issues. I have a friend whose husband suffered a brain tumor a couple of years ago. She is following a vegan diet, and we cannot, for the life of us, convince him to stop eating pot roast, chili cheesesteaks, cheeseburgers. He's, I think, approaching this with a fatalistic attitude of, my life is already going to be shortened. What good is it going to do me to stop, you know, and change my diet at this point? He's in his early 70s and under treatment, which is helping, but he also has tremors, balance issues, vision problems, and it's ongoing. And we feel like if he would make a change in his diet, it would definitely help. Both of us, my girlfriend and I, she's very vegan. I cheat a little. So I wanted to get your professional thoughts on how what he's eating is affecting him.
So, Rachel, hold on. Rachel, wait. Let me ask you a quick question. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So I just want to commiserate a little with you, because I mentioned earlier that I'm sort of in that same spot with a family member who has diverticulosis, which causes diverticulitis, if I'm correct.
Yes.
And has had colon cancer, a resection, all kinds of issues that I won't even really kind of go into beyond that. So a lot. And this is someone who eats a ton, not just animal products, but also of the greasier end of the spectrum of the animal products, a lot, and doesn't eat a lot of fresh vegetables. I bought a bullet blender. I thought, you know, simple. I sent my ideas for what I call power smoothies. He said they look green. I said they taste better than you think. But you know, I mean, at one point it was like another family member said to me, "Look, he's 84. He doesn't want to change. You cannot make him change if he is sort of fatalistic about it." Now, I think there's a conversation to be had about our decisions, about the morality of decisions, whether it's the animals that are treated poorly or impacts globally in various ways in systems and climate. But in terms of individual decisions on, well, I'm going to eat this or that, I'm not going to say I've given up, but I wonder how you feel. At a certain point, do you think, I cannot force this person to change what they eat if they don't want to? You can only educate them. How do you feel about it?
Well, when we eat out, this is when we see this. When his wife is cooking for him, he's eating a much more plant-based diet, because she eats salads, she makes veggie lasagna, and she's been doing the vegan thing now for a few months, and she still eats a little seafood here and there, but when he's out and left to his own devices, it's like, oh, no.
I hear that. No, I hear that. Well, I'll kick it to our panel. Thanks for calling. I mean, I think your story, Rachel, is so common, and I really appreciate that. And so let me kind of go around the table. I'll start with Dr. Clapper. What would you say in a situation like that?
Yeah, Homo sapiens, a funny species. You know, I've never had a giraffe in the office saying, "Doc, I don't know what to eat." We animals, we do things that aren't good for us. And human nature is human nature, and you can't force anybody to do anything they don't want to do. We agree. That said, people need to understand, especially with a meat-based diet like most people eat, when you eat a piece of meat and your liver is flooded with all the amino acids in that meat, the liver responds by putting out a hormone called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1. This is the most powerful growth-promoting hormone in the body. And if you've got a brain tumor growing, to give yourself eat some meat and put a gush of IGF-1 out is like throwing gasoline on a fire, and his tumor is going to grow faster from that. Tissue growth, and if you're a woman with a breast cancer, or a guy with a prostate cancer, or a man with a brain tumor, you should not be eating meat on that basis alone. To see this man hold on to his old ways of eating, it's a matter of choosing the bean chili instead of the beef chili. You know, it's not that big a deal, but it would make such a difference in his life, possibly. Now, I can't say, you know, eat vegetables and brain tumor is going to magically go away. But the people you describe, the man with all the intestinal problems who won't give up his meat, he's got those problems because of his diet, and he's going to get more of them. If he would, you know, even just for a couple of weeks, join the Jumpstart program and just try a plant-based diet for 2 weeks, and he would feel so much better, likely so with this brain tumor fellow. It's certainly the man, you got nothing left to lose and a lot to gain from a plant-based diet.
Okay. Dr. Barnett, you want to weigh in?
Yeah. So we should just be clear that for what we know about a whole food plant-based diet, it's kind of a slam dunk when it comes to heart disease and diabetes. For cancer, we're not as clear. You know, cancer is not one disease. Certain cancers clearly have a dietary component, you know, colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. In fact, there's been studies that show that you can actually shrink prostate cancers by going on a low-fat, whole-food, plant-based diet and get your PSA to come down. You know, so the specific case of a brain tumor, I don't think we should make promises. We don't really know. But for most of what's affecting Americans, and it's not usually brain tumors, you know, it's usually diabetes, heart disease, something like obesity, this is really, really powerful medicine.
How about diverticulosis?
So for diverticulosis,
good evidence?
Well, it's certainly connected with the development of diverticulosis because it has to do with straining at stool, having high intra-abdominal pressures. You know, when Dennis Burkitt was in Africa, Burkitt's lymphoma is named after him. He discovered the virus that causes mononucleosis. You know, he also noticed that there was very little, diverticulitis, very little appendicitis, and also people had really huge poops. You know, right? So, and it's because they're just living.
That's why you listen to Connections, everyone.
And it's because people are getting lots and lots of fiber. And when we talk about getting, you know, fiber being important in the diets, you know, some people really get a lot of fiber. And that really can help you avoid getting diverticulosis, which can lead to diverticulitis.
It's not a matter of just taking Metamucil. The whole plant foods make a stool that's soft and easy for the colon to push along. And so these little outpouchings of diverticuli, they close up and then they can go away with a whole food plant-based diet. It's really remarkable to see.
So, Bob, why did you decide, I can change? I mean, obviously, you're the kind of person who spent years, if not decades, changing diets and trying different things. So maybe that's more part of your DNA. But you have made a change that looks permanent to me. Why did you make it when so many people decide, hey, you know, if I'm overweight or if I've got this, that's it. I don't want to give up X, Y, and Z. That's the life I like to live. Why do you think people are different in that way? Why do you think you were in the category that says, I'll change, I'll do it?
Well, I think I put the whole picture together. And I believe in my own health and this diet, this way of life is absolutely by far the best logical choice. You know, I'm not a doctor, but when you think about all of the phytochemicals and antioxidants that are available in the entire spectrum of fruits and vegetables, you get so many thousands or even tens of thousands of nutrients that somehow all of the tens of thousands of reactions that go on in nourishing your body, they just know what to do with, as opposed to just eating plain protein with cholesterol and saturated fat, or the refined grains with no fiber in it, or sugar. So it's just common sense to be able to get everything that you need from this. So once you, I will admit, I kind of mourned my barbecuing. I tried to duplicate the taste of meat, but you can't. And it's something that I think that someone who has a serious medical condition that they are concerned about has to come to terms with. And I sort of talk about raising the consciousness of my tongue, because most people's tongues just tell them, oh, this tastes good, eat more. And, or, you know, this is bitter, maybe poison, don't eat that. But I think that a tongue should actually be used to tell you whether you're actually eating something that's natural versus chemical, something that is, you know, fresh and holistic versus something that's garbage and not good for you. So I've worked on that a lot. And then, you know, not to dwell on the social aspects of it, but anytime you feel weak, it is just comforting to know that what you're doing is good for the planet. So every time you eat a vegan meal, you are helping to reverse climate change and roll back pollution. You know, it's kind of like an individual doing his own Paris Accord kind of a diet.
So, listeners, we're going to get to your phone calls. In fact, I've got a specific question from a listener for Dr. Monk on the other side of this break, and we'll take some more of your feedback as well as we talk about lifestyle medicine, as we talk about Rochester as a hotbed of lifestyle medicine, as we talk about plant-based eating and living. You just heard Bob Franke, who's Communication Director for the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute. Dr. Ted Barnett is the founder and medical director for Rochester Lifestyle Medicine and longtime co-coordinator of RAVS, the Rochester Area Vegan Society. It's always great to have Dr. Barnett here. Dr. Michael Clapper is in town, a physician, a consultant, an educator who served as the director of the Nonprofit Institute of Nutrition, Education, and Research. He's presenting tomorrow night at the Rochester Academy of Medicine, which you can still attend if you like. Dr. Rebecca Monk is a nephrologist at the University of Rochester Medical Center. So your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, the Gandhi Institute is preparing to host a program about the diversity advantage, how society benefits when inclusion transforms into full equality, and our guests discuss the issue from different perspectives. Then in our second hour, we continue our series of conversations about how workplaces are changing as a result of the Me Too movement. Join the conversation on Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. What's the website, Dr. Barnett? People want to get online, learn more, maybe take the Jumpstart program?
Yep, rocklifemed.com. That's rocklifemed.com. Or you can just Google Rochester Lifestyle Medicine.
Okay, rocklifemed.com. This is Manon in Rochester with a question for Dr. Monk. Go ahead, Manon.
Hi, Evan. I'm very glad that you are doing this program. Thank you very much. It will help me. I have an illness. I was always a vegetarian since 1998. I didn't eat any meat. My parents did eat some meat. Meat has a lot of antibiotics and pesticides and different chemicals. I've been a vegetarian. What was sad was in 2014, I was diagnosed with focal segmental glomerulosclerosis, and I was very unhappy. But Evan, the miracle was I kept eating vegetables and fruits and following the vegetarian diet, and my creatinine stayed at a zero, started fighting doctors at Strong Hospital, went to RDH, and kept fighting the battle. Today, I'm alive with no medication, just with this diet. I want to ask Dr. Monkar if it's okay to drink one cup of milk a day. I process protein very slowly. I hope I can bring this conference to the radio program at your Connections one day, and how I survived for 5 years with no medication. Prednisone caused a lot of side effects. I went to my nephrologist who gave me Cellcept this time. I denied it because it has horrible side effects. Kidney medicines have toxic side effects. But Dr. Monka, I'd like to ask you if I can drink a little bit of milk and this medicine that the doctor gave me. I'm terrified of the medicine. So if you can...
Well, that's an interesting question. You have a specific kind of kidney disease that affects a part of the kidney called the glomerulus, the filters of the kidneys. And sometimes that does require more specific medications to treat it. It's great that you've done so well with it, with your diet. I think, in general, a whole food plant-based diet can help with reducing the protein in the urine that you can get with this disease and helping delay progression of the chronic kidney disease that you get. I don't know, milk has, I don't know what to say. I think I don't really have a lot of data to tell you whether one glass of milk is going to affect things too much. If you want to drink that glass of milk, probably other people here may disagree. I've got the whole food, but I probably be if you've been, you know, mostly plant based and you've done okay with it, that's great. I can't really tell you how that one glass of milk is going to affect you, but I don't know. This is a very specific kind of kidney disease.
Sure. So actually, we do have a program. We have a dietitian who sees our chronic kidney disease patients, and I think that'd be a really great question for her. She can come in and see. Yeah. So
you know, it depends. If your kidney function is good from a kidney disease standpoint, it doesn't. It has a little bit of potassium. It has some phosphorus. But you have a specific kind of kidney disease. I don't think it would impact on that kind of kidney disease in particular.
But I think the thing to remember always is that no matter what specific illness you have, you're still at risk for the things that get most of us, which is atherosclerosis and diabetes, that type of thing. And milk is definitely not good for that.
Exactly.
So, the question is why she's drinking the milk at all outside of the taste of it. There's nothing in a glass of cow's milk. If you want protein, then have some lentils or beans. If you want calcium, it's in dark green vegetables. There's nothing in it really that she's getting. And now knowing that what they feed the cows, the grains are sprayed with pesticides and herbicides and antibiotics. And the cows are pregnant, so the milk is full of estrogens, and it's a spooky thing to be pouring on, to be drinking out of a glass or pouring on your cereal these days. There's all these nicer rice milks and hemp milks and oat
milks.
Yes, I would really recommend that you go to the plant-based milk. I think it's safer all around.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, thank you, Manon. Dee in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Dee.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say that I've been a... I was a vegetarian for over 25 years, and I became a vegan 4 years ago. And a way that I transitioned was I said goodbye to my favorite foods for a year, and I had a good time just saying goodbye, and I haven't looked back. My problem was I found every wonderful bakery in Rochester that served vegan donuts and brownies. So I have not lost any weight, but I've maintained it, and this year I'm looking forward to looking into what you folks do and getting on a healthier vegan diet. And that's all I wanted to say. It can be done. I just took my time, and it took a full year, and I'm looking forward to being a healthier person. And I do feel good. I've maintained my weight for 3 years, but I am an overweight vegan, and there are overweight vegans out there. Because we still like to eat, and we, thank goodness there's a lot of vegan options out there, right? But they're not always the best ones. That's all I wanted to say.
Dee, thank you for the phone call. Some thoughts from the guests there, Dr. Klepper?
Sure. When I hear the words overweight vegan, I know that this person must be eating two foods that we really recommend that people don't. You know, instead of vegan, we're using the phrase whole food plant-based. Well, stop the presses. Whole food. That means things that didn't come out of packages and bottles, and that includes olive oil and coconut oil and all these vegetable oils. Overweight vegans are almost always eating oils, and they're eating flour products, baked goods and donuts and breads, etc. And that is a processed food that raises your sugar levels and makes insulin store fats, etc. Yank out the flour products and the dairy. Instead, eat whole plant foods only, soups and salads and steamed veggies and lentil stews.
Even vegan donuts?
Donuts.
Did you know that the episode of The Simpsons where Homer sold his soul to the devil for that forbidden donut? It was actually a vegan donut.
It was a vegan donut, but yeah. That's why the devil...
He thought it was fine.
But it wasn't. That's why the devil's on the other side of that bar. But that's the point. Overweight vegans are eating flour and oil. And if you just stop that and really, 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 really whole foods, the weight falls off. You can't hold weight on salads and soups and steamed veggies.
Bob's lost 115 pounds on it. You want to weigh in on this one? Go ahead.
Pardon that pun.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. You want to weigh in. Oh, boy.
Well, yeah, I'll just take a second to talk about what happens if you do enroll in the Jumpstart program. Mm-hmm. It's 15 days. It goes from 3 Saturdays, and you come in after fasting on a Friday night, and you get all of your vitals, your height, your weight, your girth, blood pressure, and then a little blood stick where you get your lipids for your cholesterol and your blood sugar. And then there's an educational program, and we're kind of doing a little mini version of that now, but we really emphasize practical skills and survival. So we spend time looking at menus. Everybody that comes in gets 26 different menu cards, and they just look through a lot of different options and decide what they'd like to eat for the next 2 weeks. And then we break down the ingredients for all of these recipes into shopping lists. So when people leave, They know what they're going to buy, they know how they're going to prepare it, they know how they're going to survive, and then they know why. And, you know, we have online support, both there's a closed Facebook group, and I'm also responsible for doing some coaching for diaries, which is another, I think, very important aspect for success if you're going to try to change your lifestyle.
Nothing is more horrifying than writing down and looking at a piece of paper that shows you what you ate in a day. Mm-hmm. You're gonna hate yourself. I hate myself whenever I see that. I go, what did I do here?
Yeah, and if I could add something to that, one of the other things we do is, so that the finger stick he was telling you about, the little blood draw, they get the results instantly. So they get it right that the first Saturday morning, and then the third Saturday, which is 15 days in. The reason we chose 15 days is it begins and ends on the same day of the week. And it's the best experience of my life as a physician. We have patients who, they started out with a cholesterol of 250. Oh, by the way, do you know your cholesterol is now 170? Really? It dropped 70 points.
2 weeks later.
2 weeks later. Or last week, somebody finished, her cholesterol dropped 90 points. And so the average drop for people whose cholesterol is over 200 is 50 points in 2 weeks.
So I'm being flip when I say it's horrifying to write down what you have, but I'm sure it makes a tremendous impact.
Well, you'd be accountable. Sure.
You've got to be accountable.
Well, it goes both ways, okay? Because after you've gone for these 2 weeks and you see what you've eaten and you compare how you were 2 weeks ago to how you are now, you know how you did it. So we hope everybody sticks with it. But if you don't, you know what you did and you can always go back to it.
Right. By the way, Dr. Klepper, what do you eat for dessert?
Oh, all the whole
cucumbers?
papayas and mangoes and berries with rice milk on it. And we're big blueberry fans at our place, so we find all sorts of ways to do that. My wife makes up a dynamite smoothie. Lots of things from the fruit kingdom to enjoy.
All right, and again, I think there is probably in the last, I'm sure, 28 years since you've been vegan, Dr. Burnett, there's a huge change in how people think that they can find, just as Bob said, finding the shopping list, going to the grocery store, but also going out to eat. Is that kind of another frontier? Are you frustrated with sort of dining out still, or do you see that changing?
Well, both. Right? It's definitely getting better. I mean, you know, 1991, nobody knew what the word vegan meant. And now we're actually, you know, we've kind of upped the ante a little bit because now we're saying we want it to be oil-free. And people say, oh, you just can't make up your mind, can you? So because, you know, we found, as Michael was saying earlier, Dr. Clapper was saying earlier, that we really need to avoid the oils as well. And that you have, when you hear about someone who's an overweight vegan, it's probably because they're consuming lots of oils, also processed grains. So, but yeah, going out to eat is definitely better. But again, it's not really going out to eat and it's not really eating processed food. You really need to learn to do this yourself. Learn to cook, you know, eat food.
Boy, so, learn yeah. to cook, absolutely. Yeah. Rob wants to know, is honey or grade B maple syrup good for you or is that just more sugar?
Ultimately, they're just more sugar. The, you know, like the toxicologists say, the dose makes the poison. And a half a teaspoon of maple syrup in your tea is not really going to cause any harm. But you don't want to be eating sugar as a food with candy bars and donuts as eating sugar as a food. Don't do that. But if you're just doing tiny amounts of flavoring, it doesn't matter a heck of a lot between the honey and the syrup.
All right. Well, combined with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's tax proposal and this hour, this is like the most feedback we've ever had in one day on this program. Let's get through as much of it as we can. Andy in Rochester next. Keep it tight. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi, everybody. Great show. Hi, Dr. Burnett. Hey, I've been vegan for 17, going on 18 years, and this show's about health, so I'll keep this part short. I became vegan solely for the cruelty aspect of it. And your gentleman there talking about vegans putting animals at a higher level than humans, that's not true. But what we're doing is this. It's unprecedented, the amount of animal torture in the last 70 years of billions and billions of animals. And a reason a lot of people are having a hard time going vegan plant-based is because they subsidize the milk, the dairy industry, and the meat industry. And with all their commercials and disinformation, it's hard for the average person to know what to do. And I would say, number one, that dairy is probably the biggest lie that's ever been. But anyhow, I just keep my part short about that. But that's what I wanted to say. But so the best thing I ever did is went vegan. I went for cruelty reasons, but all these years later, the bonus is it's the healthiest thing I could have ever done.
Andy, if you're the Andy I think you are, I owe you an email back. Send me an email separately offline, will you?
Yeah, I will. I'll do that, Evan.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. Anybody want to add to that? I do think that it's always a good idea for society to ask, what are future generations going to be embarrassed about? When we look back, what are they going to look at us and say, I can't believe they did X? And when we look at the way we treat animals that we eat, whether you eat them or not, you don't have to torture them. And the wide-scale torture is absolutely going to be something I think we will be embarrassed about. Mm-hmm. Fair?
Fair.
And Bob, you know, he invoked one of your earlier comments. You want to respond? Go ahead.
Sure. First, I'd like to say that I agree with everything that he has to say.
Yeah.
And I also stand by what I said before, too. I really think, you know, on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, that thinking about, you know, aggression and, you know, so-called animal liberation, which does discount, I believe, you know, some humanity, is a real thing. But I think we just all have to listen to each other. And, my opinion is people need to learn about what happens to 50 billion industrial farmed animals every year. And most people don't want to see that. And I don't believe in forcing those images on people, but I invite people to search for themselves. You know, when they're putting things into their body, to understand where they come from, and that will help to make them, I think, just a more conscious person.
All right, let me just rip through some more emails. Becca says, I'm kind of plant-based, but I make bone broth for health benefits, getting the bones from local farmers, and I struggle with giving up cheese. However, if I could just add, cutting out processed sugars has made a huge difference for me in how I feel. A lot of people are nervous about sugars and fruit. I'm not. So could your panel speak to that? Thanks for a great show. Sugar and fruit.
Not a problem, as long as you're eating whole fruit, not fruit juices, but whole fruits, not a problem.
Fruit juices that you buy in bottles?
Pure sugar and water. Don't bother.
Okay. And probably no surprise to the medical folks on the panel to hear Becca say giving up processed sugars has made her feel tremendously better. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Right.
You hear that all the time?
Yes, published in the journal Duh.
and for giving up cheese is also really, really hard. And a lot of people are really addicted to cheese, but it's probably the best thing you can do for your health is to give up that cheese.
Just congealed fermented butter fat. Call it for what it is. And there's vegan cheeses now. None of them are great, but they're better than the dairy cheeses.
Congealed
fermented butter fat is all that it is.
See why people want to go see Dr. Clapper tomorrow night. Erica says, having been brought up on meat and potatoes meals, I have no idea where to start planning a meal following a vegan diet. So let's end this. We've got 40 seconds left. Where does one begin? Where are you going to have her begin?
She should watch the movie Forks Over Knives, and she should then go to their website, Forks Over Knives, and she should also come to hear Dr. Clapper tomorrow night and check our website and sign up for one of our programs.
The website is?
RockLifeMed.com.
And the event tomorrow night is?
Dr. Michael Clapper speaking on what I wished I'd learned about nutrition in medical school.
Okay, that's tomorrow night at the Rochester area, Rochester Academy of Medicine.
Right.
And you starts when?
Starts at 7 o'clock. 7:30 is the lecture. There's dinner at 6 o'clock, and you can get tickets at rocklifemed.com.
And I will squeeze in Cindy's email. She says, is there an advantage to one milk over another? We use silk nut protein milk, almonds, cashews, pea protein. Better or worse?
No,
they're all the same.
No?
All the same.
Are they really all the same?
Just see how much added sugar there is.
Yeah.
They're all different. Depends on the brand.
Well, they're a novelty food. They're not for drinking beverages. That's what water's for.
Yeah. Read the labels.
Read the labels. Both hours. I could have just read email all day. And I just want to thank our guest, Dr. Clapper. It's drclapper.com, K-L-A-P-E-R, if you want to learn more about his work. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Really appreciate it. Dr. Rebecca Monk from the University of Rochester Medical Center, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Dr. Ted Barnett, founder and medical director for Rochester Lifestyle Medicine. As always, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Bob Franke, communication director for the Institute. Thank you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Evan.
Rob Braden, engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow.